So today I'm going to tell you about some work that we've been doing at UW on deterministic execution. And in this project, I'm going to propose operating system support for deterministic execution through a new OS abstraction. My co-authors on this project are Nick Hunt, Luis Cezé, and Steve Gribble. So since we're going to see three talks on determinism, I'll start off by explaining why we all think non-determinism is a problem. So we all know that multi-threaded programs are not deterministic. And this is especially true when they execute on multiprocessors. And the main reason for this is that shared memory axes can interleave in a non-deterministic way, as illustrated by this example. But non-determinism can crop up for reasons more than just shared memory. For example, if we have a buffered IPC channel with multiple consumer processes, depending on the order in which the consumer processes are scheduled, they may get different messages, as demonstrated by this example. So real systems have to deal with non-determinism coming from many, many different sources. I just showed you shared memory and IPC. We also have POSIX signals, and we have external devices like disks and the network. So the basic problem is that non-determinism makes systems hard to repeat, which makes them, first of all, hard to test, because when you run a program with the same input, you could get different outputs. It makes programs hard to debug, because when you run a program out in production, you're not sure exactly what happened, and this is exactly what Heisenbugs are. And then finally, it makes programs hard to replicate for fault tolerance using the state machine approach, because non-determinism makes it very easy for the individual replicas to get out of sync. And of course, this brave new world where everything is multi-core makes the problem much, much worse. So our solution is to propose operating system support for deterministic execution. We want to do this for all arbitrary programs, even executing on multiprocessors. And we want to attack all sources of non-determinism, not just the non-determinism that arises from shared memory. And so to do this, we propose a new abstraction called a deterministic process group. The basic idea behind a deterministic process group is it allows programmers to define what we call a deterministic box around a group of processes. Given this deterministic box, the operating system ensures that all these processes execute in a completely deterministic way. So before I explain how deterministic process groups work, I want to raise and discuss two really important questions. So the first one is, what are the things that we can actually make deterministic? So clearly we can't make the entire world deterministic. That's kind of silly. So there has to be a boundary somewhere between determinism and non-determinism. Where's that boundary? And then the second question is, what can we do about all these remaining sources of non-determinism that we cannot eliminate and make deterministic? So I'm going to answer both of these questions, starting with the first question. And our answer to this question is to observe that all sources of non-determinism can be distinguished into one of two types, depending on whether it can or cannot be eliminated. And we refer to this distinction as internal versus external non-determinism. Internal non-determinism arises from scheduling artifacts inside of the system. These are things like hardware timers at the low level. And although the programmer cannot control these scheduling artifacts, it turns out that the system actually can control these scheduling artifacts. So internal non-determinism is not fundamental, and I'll show you it can be eliminated. On the other hand, external non-determinism arises from interactions with the unpredictable external world. And so since we don't control the other end of this interaction, external non-determinism is a fundamental property of systems that we cannot eliminate. So this is probably still a little bit vague, so I'll be more concrete by explaining how we draw this distinction in our system. So on the left, I'm going to show you sources of internal non-determinism that we can eliminate and make deterministic. On the right, I'm going to show you sources of external non-determinism which are fundamental and can't be eliminated. Let's start off with the easy stuff. So users are just uncontrollable and unpredictable, and so they're sources of external non-determinism. Similarly, for sources of real-time clocks and other sources of true randomness. We also consider the network a source of external non-determinism because, in general, we don't know where packets are coming from. They could come from arbitrary places. So now the interesting question is, what are the sorts of things that constitute internal determinism? And so our answer to this question is to allow programmers to define a process group. And once we have this process group, all of the channels that this process group uses to communicate, such as things like shared memory pipes and private local files, are usually non-deterministic. But since they're contained completely within the process group, we can control the way that they're scheduled, and we can ensure that they're scheduled in a deterministic way. However, if one of these processes inside of this process group communicates with another process outside the group, then we consider that a source of external non-determinism. So this answers the first question. The stuff on the left are sources of non-determinism that can be eliminated. The second question is, what do we do about all the remaining sources of external non-determinism? So our solution to this problem is to allow programmers to control exactly how these inputs affect the deterministic box. And this includes both the value of all these non-deterministic inputs as well as the time at which the non-deterministic inputs arrive. And we do this by supporting a new type of program that we call a shim program, which I'm going to talk about in detail later. But before I do that, I want to go over an alternate design decision that we could have made. There's no reason we couldn't have built a deterministic hypervisor and put an entire virtual machine inside of the deterministic box. We just consider the deterministic process group abstraction to be more flexible and less costly to implement. So in a nutshell, a deterministic process group is a group of ordinary Linux processes around which we have a deterministic box. Given the deterministic box, the operating system ensures that all internal non-determinism is eliminated. This includes non-determinism through shared memory and pipes and local files. Secondly, the operating system ensures that all external non-determinism is funneled through this user space shim program, which has the power to precisely control all of the external non-deterministic inputs. So our contributions are, first of all, that we identify this distinction between internal and external non-determinism. And the real key to this distinction is that internal non-determinism can always be eliminated if we want to. Secondly, we propose an abstraction that exploits this distinction. And then thirdly, we have retrofitted this abstraction into a version of Linux that we call DOS, which supports arbitrary, unmodified binaries executing inside of a deterministic process group. And finally, we demonstrate this abstraction using three applications, which are evaluated. And I'll talk about these here in more detail in the paper. So in the rest of this talk, I want to further motivate why we want DPGs through two example use cases. Then I'll tell you about deterministic process groups and their semantics at the user level. Then I'll dive into our version of Linux called DOS. And finally, I'll give you a performance evaluation. So as a first example, let's say you have a parallel computation. Maybe this is a scientific program of some sort, which executes off of some local input files. So if you execute that program inside of a deterministic process group, it executes completely deterministically, even on a multiprocessor, which gives you benefits for debugging because it always executes the same way every time. And it also gives you benefits for testing because you can test just some set of input files. You don't have to worry about testing all the ways in which the threads can interleave. As an second example, let's say you have a web server which has many processes or even many threads in each process. So this kind of application interacts continuously with the external world, so it doesn't make as much sense to make it completely deterministic. But what we can do is we can write a shim program which implements deterministic record and replay without requiring any web server modification. And of course, this is an old idea, but the advantage of our approach is that because all of the internal non-determinism is completely eliminated, we have significantly less non-determinism that needs to be logged. And so as you'll see in our evaluation, our log sizes are three orders of magnitude smaller than other systems. Another thing we can do is we can exploit this internal determinism to make it very easy to replicate programs which are traditionally hard to replicate. So if we take the state machine approach to replication and use some replication protocol, usually we have to ensure that each of the nodes executes deterministically, and deterministic process groups are an easy way to do that. As a final example, I want to demonstrate how we can use DPGs to actually improve the construction of applications. So the prior two examples showed how we can use shim programs to build services that work for any application, but we can actually use shim programs to in a very application-specific way. So one thing that we could do is we can construct a web server into two parts. There's a deterministic part which runs inside a deterministic process group, and a non-deterministic part which runs inside of a shim program. And one thing you could do with this is you might have some low-level trusted network I/O code that you don't care if it executes non-deterministically because you're very sure that it's correct. But then you have lots of high-level request processing code, and so you can execute that code inside of a deterministic process group. And this gives you determinism at a higher level of abstraction than just all these low-level network inputs. So now I'm going to tell you about the semantics of deterministic process group at the user level. So we create a new deterministic process group by making a call to a new system call that we call sysmakedeterministic. This system call creates a new process group with initially just one process, and as that process forks off more children, the box expands to include all the children processes which are forked off of that original process. And other than that initial call to sysmakedeterministic, the system interface for these processes is exactly the same as all ordinary Linux processes. This means they make the same system calls and they execute on top of the same hardware instruction set. So now to understand DPGs further, we have to answer two questions. The first is, what are the semantics of internal determinism? So I've mentioned deterministic execution. What is it that I actually mean by that? And secondly, how do these shim programs actually go about manipulating and controlling all the external inputs? So to answer the first question, let's assume that we have a program with no external communication, only internal communication. The operating system will guarantee that this program executes completely deterministically. And conceptually, the way this happens is that the program executes as if it was serialized onto a logical timeline, although our implementation will actually execute the program in parallel, as we'll see later. The way one of these logical timelines works is something like this. It's not important what these instructions are exactly, but what is important is that every time this program runs, the instructions will appear to execute in the same serial order, which means, first of all, that this read of x will always return the same value, and second of all, that this read of a blocking pipe will always block for the same number of logical time steps and will always return exactly the same data, assuming, of course, that the pipe is an internal communication channel. So although we guarantee that this program will execute deterministically in logical time, it, of course, won't execute deterministically in physical time, because just like ordinary programs, arbitrary delays are always possible. And so we say that DPGs give deterministic results, but not deterministic performance. So now to understand how external non-determinism affects this picture, let's replace this read of an internal pipe with a read of an external network socket. So since this external network socket is an external communication channel, it introduces non-determinism in two ways. First, because it returns non-deterministic data. And secondly, because it blocks for a non-deterministic amount of time. And this is because the packet that's being read arrives from some external source that we have no control over. So we like to refer to these two kinds of non-determinism as the what and the when. And it's these two kinds of non-determinism on which shim programs can interpose. So now to demonstrate how a shim program might actually go about intercepting and manipulating this read system call, I'm going to use as an example record and replay and show how a shim program would first record the non-determinism experienced by this read system call and secondly replay that non-determinism to deterministically execute what was executed before. So over on the left here, we have a deterministic thread that's about to execute the read system call. As it executes the call, the call is intercepted by the shim program, and now let's say that the shim program wants to just simply record the non-determinism that's happening in the program. So the shim program forwards the system call onto the operating system, which returns sometime later with some amount of data. And then the shim program can return back to user space and record both the return value of the system call as well as the logical time at which this system call happened to return on this execution. Then later to replay the execution, the shim program can simply ignore the operating system, read the return value from a log, just like a normal record and replay system. The difference is that the shim program wants to guarantee that the system call returns at the same logical time. So it instructs the operating system to block the deterministic thread at time t equals 10. And at that point, it can schedule the return back to the deterministic thread. So I want to stress that shim programs are useful for more than just record and replay. So as just a teaser of that, I'll talk about how we might implement deterministic replication using a state machine approach on top of DPGs and shim programs. So the idea here is that the shim programs are going to participate in some replication protocol. For this example, we don't really care what it is. It could be Paxos, Virtual Synchrony, or pick your favorite. And the key idea is that in addition to deciding on an order in which messages are delivered to each of the replicas, the replication protocol also has to decide on a logical time at which each message is delivered. And this will ensure that all of the replicas see the same input at the same logical time, which ensures that they all evolve in a deterministic way. So we've implemented and demonstrated this idea using a simple two-phase commit protocol, which you can read about in the paper. So now I'm going to dive a little bit into some interesting details of our Linux-based implementation. So we retrofitted DPGs onto a version of Linux 2.6. There are about 8,000 lines of code changed. And this implementation transparently supports execution of unmodified application binaries. So in order to support DPGs, we had to implement two changes to Linux. First, we had to implement a deterministic scheduler. And then second, we had to implement an API for writing shim programs. And in order to do this, we had to modify a few subsystems, including thread scheduling, virtual memory, and system call entry exit. And the most interesting part of the implementation is the deterministic scheduler. So that's what I'm going to focus on in this talk. And since we did this in Linux, which is a real mature operating system, there were a lot of interesting implementation challenges, which are described in depth in the paper. So the first implementation choice we had to make is what deterministic execution algorithm we're going to use. And so we actually didn't invent one. There's been some recent work on deterministic execution and algorithms for deterministic execution. We decided to implement an algorithm called DMPO from prior work. There are actually other algorithms which have better theoretical performance than DMPO. We chose DMPO just for ease of implementation so we could test out the idea of deterministic process groups. So now I'm going to explain first, sort of at a high level, how DMPO works, and then secondly, how we actually implemented DMPO inside of DOS. So the key idea behind DMPO is to allow threads to run in parallel as long as possible. Then at some point when they communicate, we want to serialize that communication in a deterministic way and then resume parallel execution. So we have three threads. They're all running in parallel up until the point that the system detects that they're about to communicate. Then at that point, the system will serialize the communication in a deterministic way, resume parallel execution, and so we have this alternation between parallel and serial execution. The way that we detect communication is using an ownership table, which simply assigns ownership of data to threads. And so the system says that there's communication if it ever detects that a thread is about to touch data that it does not own. The last thing I want to mention about DMPO at a high level is that I promise you that execution would appear to execute as if it was serialized onto a logical timeline. So we can see that since each of these modes, the parallel modes and the serial modes, appear to execute atomically, they basically constitute a set of atomic steps which happen serially. So now, the most interesting part of this implementation was how we implemented the ownership table and how we detected when communication was about to happen. So that's what I'm going to explain now. So in order to implement the ownership table, we have to instrument the system interface for communication. So this means, first of all, that we have to instrument all loads and stores to detect shared memory communication. And secondly, we have to instrument system calls to detect all of the in-kernel communication channels. And this includes explicit communication through the kernel, like communication over pipes and local files and signals. It also includes implicit communication through the kernel. You could think of these as covert channels. So the idea here is that if we take the address space as an example, multiple threads might be allocating virtual pages from the address space. We want to ensure that these threads allocate these virtual pages in a deterministic order. So the way that we instrumented shared memory is by using page protection hardware. And so the idea is to give each thread its own shadow page table and distribute the permission bits among the shadow page table in a way that denotes the current page ownership. Now we can use page faults to detect communication. So this effectively means that we track the ownership transitions of shared memory at a page granularity. To instrument all the communication to the kernel, we had to instrument system calls. So the way we do this is that we decide on entry to a system call what channels are about to be used. So for read, this means we have to recognize that it's about to communicate over a pipe or file. And for mmap, we need to recognize that there's implicit communication through the thread's address space. Then we acquire ownership of these communication channels, where the ownership table is just simply a hash table in memory inside the kernel. And then we have to decide if any of these channels represent external communication that go outside of the deterministic box. And if this is true, then we have to forward the system call onto the shim program so that the shim program can interpose on all of the external non-determinism. So there are many challenges and complexities which I don't have time to describe, but are described in depth in the paper. And they deal with how we actually decide which channels are being used by the system call. So lastly, I'll summarize our performance evaluation. So the setup for this evaluation is that we ran each application inside of its own isolated deterministic process group. And we had a few questions that we wanted to answer in this evaluation. The first is we wanted to get some confidence that we actually implemented a deterministic execution. So for this, we have a modified version of the RACI deterministic stress test from Mark Hill at Wisconsin. And our modified version stresses all communication channels through the kernel and not just communication channels through shared memory. Then once we were satisfied that our implementation ensured determinism, we had three key questions that we wanted to answer. So the first question we wanted to answer is how much internal non-determinism were we able to eliminate? And the way we answered this question was by measuring the log sizes for recording all of the external non-determinism. And I'll get to that in a bit. And then secondly, we have two more fundamental performance questions, which is how much does DOS affect overhead and how much does DOS affect parallel scalability? So first, the first question. And to answer this first question, we implemented an execution recorder shim program, which records all of the external non-determinism experienced by a DPG. And for comparison purposes, we look at the numbers reported by SMP Revert, which is a hypervisor for full system record and replay. It uses a similar page level ownership tracking tricks to record the orders in which shared memory is accessed. And of course, that shared memory is a source of internal non-determinism that we don't have to record, but SMP Revert does have to record. And so because of this, we see that the log sizes produced by SMP Revert are four orders of magnitude larger than the log sizes produced by our system. And in fact, the only things in these logs in our system are calls to get time of day, because we selected applications for this comparison which have very little external non-determinism. So the second question is, how much overhead does DOS impose on programs? So there are two potential sources of overhead. The first is just inside the deterministic scheduler itself that can impose overhead. And the second is this interposition on non-determinism, where we have to forward non-deterministic system calls over to the shim program. And in order to tease out these two sources of overhead, we ran each benchmark in three ways. First, we ran the benchmark ordinarily in a non-deterministic way without any determinism. Secondly, we ran the benchmark inside of a deterministic process group. This allows us to measure the scheduling overheads. And then finally, we ran each benchmark inside of a deterministic process group, additionally with an execution recorder shim program, which allows us to measure the additional overheads which are due to this shim program interposition. So our first benchmark is Apache, running with 16 worker threads and 100 kilobyte static pages. And in this benchmark, DPGs are able to saturate a 1 gigabit network, so we see no performance degradation. With 10 kilobyte static pages, non-deterministic execution, of course, still saturates the 1 gigabit network. We see some drop with DPGs and Notion program, and an additional drop with DPGs and an execution recorder shim program. And the additional drop here is due to the relative high frequency of system calls that this particular benchmark happens to make. The second benchmark we evaluated was the Chromium web browser. So we, in this benchmark, we scripted a user session where we opened up 12 URLs in very rapid succession and measured the latency of opening all 12 URLs, which were loaded from a local area network. And so since this benchmark makes much fewer system calls relatively, we see less overheads due to the shim program, but still some overheads due to deterministic execution. And then so finally, to really stress the deterministic execution algorithm or implementation, we ran some parallel benchmarks which are very highly tuned for parallelism. So in this graph, I'm going to show you the slowdown of running a benchmark inside of a deterministic process group. So the 5x over here means that the benchmark takes 5 times longer to run inside of a DPG than when run in an ordinary non-deterministic way. So this is a representative set of benchmarks. It's not all the benchmarks we ran. So some of the benchmarks have relatively decent performance from anywhere from essentially no overhead to somewhere under 3x. Other benchmarks have much worse overhead, and the major reason for this is fine-grained sharing, since we track ownership of shared memory at the page granularity. Anytime a benchmark such as FMM has frequent sharing at granularity finer than a page, we have false sharing and extra serialization. The last thing I want to mention on this graph is that over on the left, the benchmarks are generally not getting worse overhead as we add more threads, which means they preserve the already good scalability of the original program. Whereas over on the right, the benchmarks are getting worse overhead as we add threads, which means that we unfortunately lose scalability compared to the original program. So to wrap up, I told you about a new abstraction called deterministic process groups. I told you about how we retrofitted deterministic process groups into a version of Linux that we call DOS. And finally, in the paper, we have many, many more implementation details and a more thorough evaluation. So thanks. I'll take questions.
Leonid Ryzhik, NICTED, UNSW. So in using this technique for debugging, is it your intention that you will only run the program deterministically during debugging and then go to normal execution in production mode? Or do you just always run it inside a DPG?
The ideal world would be that you always run inside a DPG. And so some workloads, that's possible. Other workloads, not possible.
Yeah, it looks like the overhead is not always going to be acceptable.
Right.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Tom Pin from UMass. I have a question. I mean, so like, how you decide the timeline?
Sorry?
I mean, how you will decide the timeline? I mean, according to your implementation, you said you will according to timeline, I mean, to control the external inputs or some other things. I mean, how can you decide the timeline? You use those memory access or other information to decide the timeline, or?
You mean how do we decide on the transitions where we actually increment logical time?
Yeah, logical timeline, yes.
Right, so logical time increments essentially either when a fixed set of instructions are reached or after threads actually communicate.
Okay, so I have another question, following question. It's like, if you use the timeline, that means if I insert some instructions, that will, change the timeline. So my question is like this. If I find there is a bug, I cannot get my, I expected results. I want to debug that. But I think it's hard to debug that. For example, if I use GDB, then everything is totally different. It's not a good way. I think maybe we should avoid that. But if I, another way is like the simplest way, it's to insert some printf. But if I insert some printf, that will change those instructions.
I'm not sure I understand the question, so let's take it offline.
Huh?
I think he was trying to say that if you put in debug printfs, then it's going to distort the
right.
Instructions.
You're right. If you put in debug printfs, it will distort the execution. That's correct.
Sorry, can you say again? Okay.
Next.
Okay.
I'm Micah Brodsky from MIT. Very cool. Is it possible, sir, the benchmarks involving fine-grained synchronization, is it possible to, for example, do something like write a custom version of an MPI library or something like that, which removes the shared memory or takes advantage of programs that use fine-grained synchronization but not using a shared memory abstraction and replacing it with an abstraction that's sort of easier to tease out without having to insert page protection controls? Could you get rid of much or most of the unscalable overhead on programs involving fine-grained synchronization or fine-grained communication in parallelism?
It's certainly possible, but since we haven't done that, I hesitate to say yes.
Hi, Madan Muswati from Microsoft Research. I have a question about the premise that non-determinism is bad. It's okay for programs to have like million behaviors for a single input, right? You can just test all of them. What's not okay is for programs to have like 2 to the million behaviors. Like that's when it gets very complicated.
Right.
So I'm actually wondering if relaxing the constraint of from absolute determinism to like determinism with respect to these specified like million behaviors, would that be a good design point? Would that help improve the performance of this? I mean, have you guys thought about that trade-off at all?
So I think actually the distinction between internal and external non-determinism gets at a lot of that in that the internal stuff is the part which explodes exponentially into the billions and the billions. And so if we shrink that down to, in our case, we shrink it down to 1. And you might be proposing to shrink it down to 100 or 200. And so if you could figure out how to do that in a way which doesn't require large libraries of previous schedules that you've seen, then that would be pretty cool. Go ahead.
Hi, Björn Dübel, TU Dresden. I was wondering, did you measure CPU utilization for your Apache benchmarks?
Yes. And, well, I don't have the numbers for you, but you can essentially think of the original benchmarks as being at 100, and then take whatever overhead we had, and that was our utilization.
Okay. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Itai Aviram from Yale. Okay, so this sort of follows up on Michael Brodsky's question about the fine-grained parallelism. So, to actually more phrase it more openly, did you put any thought to how you might address this issue otherwise? Like, do you have any ideas? It seems to be the main restriction on your scalability.
Right. Yeah. So there are prior systems which use either hardware support if you actually want to build hardware, or recompile the program using a compiler which implements the algorithm inside of the way the compiler transforms the program. And so in that case, you pay some overhead, instrumentation overhead from the compiler, but you get all of your scalability back.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's thank our speaker.